Rick Abbey, Ruthie Blythe, Samer El-Shamari, Evan Tillett, Ellison Shea, Judy Lindsay Kalma, Bob Nash, Ellison Shea, Gary Goto, Deepa Tom. Thanks to Laura Gottesdiener. I'm Amy Goodman. We're in Washington. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. We dig deeper because we know if it's local, it's most important to you. Jay Koronek here in the studio today, live along with another live person. Imagine two live people in the studios. And John Conroy, I can't believe this microphone is on, so talk to me and we'll see if it is.
Okay.
No, it isn't.
Not yet.
No. Try that.
Here I am, Jay.
No. Try this one.
How about that, Jay?
Yes. Yeah. We, you know, some people play musical chairs. As a game, we play musical microphones.
Yes.
Yes, that's what we like to do here.
Yep.
Yep. And you say, well, could they check it out before they go on the air. That wouldn't be any fun, though.
No. No suspense, you know.
No. So my apologies, John, because we couldn't hear you earlier. So first we have to say Happy Mother's Day coming up on Sunday. I would like to read for you the first Mother's Day proclamation, as it was exactly known, in fact, from 1870, at sometime at the end of the show, because it is kind of surprising. I think I read it in advance of every Mother's Day over the air, because there was a beginning. Now it's quite commercial, although, thank goodness for mothers, where would we be if we didn't have a mother? I mean, there you go.
Literally, where would we be?
Literally, yeah, nowhere. And, of course, fathers, kind of important, too. It takes two to tangle, and so on.
I like the word tangle versus tangle.
Yeah, well, you know, some people get entangled. And wasn't there a Disney movie about that? Oh, no, it wasn't about sex. No, it wasn't. But anyway, so we're here, there's three stories here, kind of related. It's all about voting. This week, good news was Gross Eel Township passed a millage. That was fantastic, John. Did you vote?
Educational millage, yes.
Yes, education. Yep. And the educational millage that hasn't passed for 10 or 20 years. In Dearborn Heights, it passed.
Crestwood, yes.
Yeah, Crestwood area, Dearborn Heights. The problem is that it only passed by 87 votes. So thank you, everybody, that did turn out for that. In Gross Eel, I understand it was about 1,400 to about 800. So it was almost 2-1. So good for you folks. I'm always in support of education, and in most cases it's desperately needed, like Dearborn Heights. Crestwood didn't have a millage for all those years to fix stuff that was broken. So it's not like somebody could criticize, well, it's going for fancy technology or going for, I think there's some technology in it, but all technology these days is not so fancy. It's kind of standardized, right. kind of absolutely essential. There's no way to do it without it. And so, congratulations to Dearborn Heights, Crestwood, and those that voted, only 2,300, that's 2,300 down in Gross Eel Township. That's probably all the population voted down there, isn't it? How many people live in Gross Eel?
It's about a third of the total population.
Oh, okay.
We have about 9,000, a little over 9,000
votes. Okay, but that includes kids, so in terms of registered voters.
Registered voters.
Maybe it's 50%?
It could be. I would bet
40-50%.
35-36%.
Okay.
That's a good turnout. We normally have a very good turnout for
voters. Even though it's a totally non-standard special election. I mean, it's not a primary. It's not a November election, and so people. Yeah, I just had to turn around and wave here.
Jay's a very popular man.
Yes, we got a lot of people. I think that's some of our crew here at the college, our maintenance crew, And maybe they're giving a tour to someone. Because Friday, we're going to be, of course, on live every Friday because WHFR, our schedule is 24/7. Our programs will continue as usual. But starting next week for the spring and the summer semesters, as they call them here at the college, closed on Fridays. The only thing that's really open, I think a few administrators have to come in, because we always need administrators, and tech people, I think IT people. Oh, and, of course, grounds maintenance. They're here to fix, well, the buildings and the grounds, because there won't be any students for 3 days. So big projects usually have to take a few days, and they're going to make noise down the hallways and that, and so... that's a very good idea to have a four-day week, and that's what we have, a four-day week for the spring and summer semester. Spring semester begins next week, absolutely. I think it's Tuesday. And so if you're thinking of taking a class here at Henry Ford College for spring, it starts next week. You need to enroll now, sometime today or tomorrow. I would bet our Welcome Center is open tomorrow, Saturday. I can't guarantee it. Oh, and Welcome Center is open a solid 5 days in the spring and the summer. Now, Welcome Center is the building on the north of our campus, just immediately north of our north parking lot, and they'll be there to help you with admission or enrollment questions on Fridays also, as well as Monday through Thursday, all the way through spring and summer, because we want to help you if you want to get that special enrichment, if you want to be a better person through knowledge. What a concept. Education leads to a better life. What a concept. Anyway, and here we are, right in your local community and at a really good tuition rate. In fact, I think that slight increase that they did announce won't start until fall. I'm not sure about that, but not in the spring. I know that. So, you know, now's the time to consider that. You can go to the college website, of course, HFCC, still that extra C, .edu. And pick classes there. And if you do have to be admitted, you have to come in person. But if you're already been admitted at any time to the college, you can actually enroll directly online and do it completely that way. And great classes are still available, including our WHFR staff training class.
TCM 189.
That's right.
Let's join, because we want to sustain and continue the growth of such this great radio station that we have.
Right. TCM, tender care and
management.
You know, whatever. No, telecommunication, of course. TCM 189. It's an evening session. It's on Wednesday nights only for only 7 sessions, because in the spring they sort of speed up the classes a little bit. Ours is normally an 8 session, so we're only sped up a little teeny bit, so to 7. But the first session is next Wednesday, and you've got to be there, because if you miss that big first session, in fact, if any classes next week or in any semester, if you don't make it in the first week, you can't continue. Even if you were enrolled, you can't miss that first week.
And a little more concentrated with 7 sessions versus 8.
Because the first session is not just 1/16th of your experience like it would be in fall and winter. Still a significant portion. I mean, if you get 17% deficit in your grade point, you know, let's say you fail. 17% is a failing portion of your final grade. That's not really good. You probably can't get better than a B- or a C+. And so we started a policy here about 10 years ago that if you're not there during the first week, you never attended, and you'll be dropped out of the class. You can't continue. So got to be there when it begins. And in the spring and summer, that first week is 1 of 18. So it's like, you know, a big percentage, 25% of your grade is dependent on your participation in that first week. So check out hfcc.edu if you want more information about the spring semester classes. And I think they start on Tuesday. I'm pretty sure of that, because there's a bunch of teacher meetings on Monday, so it's hard to teach and go to a meeting at the same time. So unless it's online, maybe. But congratulations on that. One of the things I wanted to mention is the vote in Lansing. It has to do with school funding, and of course that affects Dearborn and Henry Ford College, of course. So, oh my goodness. So I'm actually typing in our big time computer here on the screen, michiganradio.org, because they got the latest up-to-date non-sensational information. And here it is, the top story. Detroit schools bill faces skeptical Senate. So it passed the House in Lansing, the House of Representatives, and outrage among education activists, including the emergency manager for the Detroit Public Schools, the former judge of the bankruptcy hearings. Mm-hmm. What was his name? Stephen Rhodes?
Stephen Rhodes.
He's now, because I think he retired from being a judge, but so he's now emergency manager of the schools. Now, he did go through education himself. I know that. He went through his schools. But, it doesn't – I'd really like somebody other than a bureaucrat. I'd like an actual educator to do that sometime, because as criticisms have come up about emergency managers across the state, whether it's school or city, the whole point is, what do they know about serving the people?
Right.
In this case, the students. I mean, what do they really understand about the process of government, which – the priority, in my humble opinion, will be helping the people of the community and the schools, first of all. And, of course, since I stated a wild opinion there, we have to say...
Views expressed on our show by the host and co-host are only the views of the such, not the views of WHFR or Henry Ford College.
Very smooth, John. Just 20,000 more chances and it'll...
We'll be there.
Fantastic, yeah. But that's true. I'm just saying, folks, I know that these people are all appointed by Governor Snyder, whom we all know and love a lot. I actually heard a clip, and it's on Michigan radio. I'd play it, but it takes 2 minutes. It was actually, maybe it was played somewhere else, too, other than Michigan radio broadcast. It was Snyder's introduction to President Obama in Flint. It was a two-minute introduction. He went there live and spoke to the audience, and he was booed all the way through, often extremely loudly.
Yeah.
And he sounded a little shaken to me, although I might have been reading something into that. But as some people said, some people made comments, on the web like they do afterwards. He was a little nervous, wasn't he? Yes, he was more than nervous, folks. It was a hostile audience. Every time he talked about, let's work together on this. Boo! Boo! Well, he's still the governor for literally until January, 2018? 2 years, 3 years? 2.5 years anyway. So if he isn't going to quit, and if we're not going to recall him, I don't know anybody that started a petition, because, again, we talked about this on the show, and even Jack Lessenberry made a comment that we played here months ago. If he's not the governor, we get the lieutenant governor. And Brian Kelly is a nice guy, but he's still a Republican, and we still got a majority Republican in the House, and not quite so much in the Senate. Well, here's the story from Michigan Radio. A set of Republican-sponsored bills to fund and overhaul the Detroit Public Schools is being met with skepticism in the state Senate. The state Senate adopted the legislation in a marathon session that lasted until early Wednesday morning. It was actually early Thursday morning. I think it was 4:30 in the morning. Can you imagine people working that long? And the final vote on this plan, I'll detail the plan in a second, and you may have heard about it on other stations, but you got to have to understand it, first of all. So it's, even if you heard it before, I'm going to go over it again, is that the Republicans passed it with their own majority. All the Democrats voted against this bill because they had problems. Okay, and 6 Republicans, God bless them, voted against it. But I'm just thinking those 6 Republicans, and again, a crazy, wild opinion of mine and somewhat satirical, probably wanted to give less money to the schools even, and that's why they voted down. The basic plan was for $500 million for Detroit Public Schools. Even former Judge Stephen Rhodes said, that's not enough. If you're going to do what you claim to do, and get this, they're going to break Detroit up into 2 districts, not 1, and there's got to be changes made and money spent to accommodate what it means to have 2 school districts in 1 city. Doesn't make sense to me at all. And there's some anti-union issues there too. But he said it's got to be at least $700 million. It's got to be at least $200 million more. So this is the, Governor Snyder's appointee, who was pretty intelligent, I think, and did the best he could as judge for the bankruptcy hearing. But that was a totally different kind of area. But even he, who was on site with this, and appointed there just to save dollars, though, said we need $200 million more to even, you know, pull us out of this in the future. Even, and he didn't criticize the nature of the plan, which a lot of people are doing there. House Speaker Kevin Cotter, who pushed it through, Republican from Mount Clemens, said, this is the right plan to fix Detroit's schools and give the city a good working school system for the long term. Yeah, right. Okay. But the legislation faces, as I said, the uphill battle in the Senate, which has its own proposal that has bipartisan support. Imagine. Democrats and Republicans both in the Senate like it enough to vote for it anyway. Well, that's not what the House passed. So, you know, as it says here in the story, key differences include how much money the state would pony up. Again, they have to pony up probably closer to $700 million to make it work the way they this is. When control of the district is restored to an elected school board. Yeah. When will the city be able to control their own school district or at least have an elected school board that makes the major majority of decisions about education? You know, so that's in the Senate bill, but not in the House bill. Also, how to handle charter schools in the city, which is still a hot topic. That's in the Senate bill. Nothing about that. A sort of free rein for charter schools to do whatever they want to. I'm exaggerating slightly. In the House bill. So State Senator David Knezik, Dearborn Democrat, Dearborn Heights Democrat, of course, he said this, we have to go back to the drawing table to pull together the different factions to have conversations about this. The problem is not going away. We have to show some leadership here and get this done for the kids of Detroit, unquote. Obviously, it can't go to the governor for a signature or a veto until it's the same bill. Exactly.
Until it's the same
right.
exact
So program. If the House and the Senate, this is just basic government, folks, until the House and the Senate agree on the same bill in committee, it can't move forward. So the Senate has to say, first of all, you know, what are they going to do? Are they going to vote on the House bill up or down? Are they going to have a committee between the two groups to try to work out the differences. In Detroit, the response from education activists was much less measured. Tonya Allen of Detroit Skillman Foundation called the legislation, quote, an attack on children, teachers, Detroit, and public education. I don't think she missed anyone there, the janitors. That's the Skillman Foundation. It funds a nonprofit group that funds a lot of educational activities. In Detroit and elsewhere. And in fact, Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, for example, the library there, the main big library when the campus was first opened, I went to Oakland University and got my bachelor's degree, is the Skillman Library.
Ah.
Because Skillman Foundation gave a big chunk of money.
The cash, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're good people for that reason and also for the help they give elsewhere. She also said, and this is Tonya from the Skillman Foundation, we're basically saying, in case you didn't get that other general statement, that Detroit children don't deserve highly qualified professional staff in their classrooms. That's what the House bill, she thinks, is saying. And she says that is ridiculous. Allen blasted some controversial provisions in the House bill, like clauses like limiting teachers' collective bargaining rights and allowing uncertified teachers into the classroom. She says if the House bills make it to Governor Snyder's desk, he should veto them. Maybe people would stop booing him so much, you know, if it comes to that. The next stop, as we said, is legislation in the Republican-led Senate. And the chamber's Republican leader, he's the majority leader in the Senate, Arlen Meekoff, don't know where he's from, doesn't say here, but says he wants to examine the House bills more closely. Well, they put it together relatively quickly, is his quote here, in 15 hours, and we've got to unpack it. A lot of stuff. Whenever people work overnight quickly, I think there's going to be a problem. I mean, you do something, you know, that the stuff is in there that nobody even knew they voted on, you know, that gets passed, too. He says, what I want to do is make sure it's funded at a level that's done in a way that we don't come back to it. And again, if they go ahead with the $500 million only, they're going to have to come back to it for the rest of the money. Speaking of money, the bottom line here, as it says in the article on MichiganRadio.org, the school district is set to run out of money at the end of June. Detroit schools have been run by state-appointed managers for the past 8 years. And so, they can't cut anything else, folks, they made really bad decisions about it. And It's up to the legislature, though, to make up the deficit, because there's no other answer. You don't have any other answer to help Detroit public schools. And you say, well, some of the Republicans still want to blame it on the city of Detroit. It's been 8 years under the state's management, basically, or the state's manager. And now the crisis is such that they can't do any more in the city. This hasn't been the city's responsibility for 8 years, for Pete's sake.
And you want the city to, and you want the city and all of the folks in the educational system to try and operate, but they're still going to be controlled by the state money.
In other parts of that bill, though, Henry Ford College, all the community colleges in Michigan are going to get a really decent increase. However, the four-year schools, not so much. And I mean, that's good for us to get a decent increase, because you know, we have the least, this is true of community colleges across the state, the least expensive tuition.
Yeah.
And so if people need to get education and they don't have much money, well, their best choice, they're really their only choice, is a community college. If they got to get started somewhere, obviously only 2-year programs, with the exception of a couple that are around the state, that, like Henry Ford College. We now have a 4-year program in the hospitality and culinary arts program, mm-hmm. Which is already started last fall, and people can get their 4-year degree from Henry Ford College. We hope also, because several community colleges are waiting for the approval, that we can get our allied health area, our nursing schools,
program, yeah.
approved for 4-year, because there's a desperate need for nurses across the state, including the Detroit area. Both men and women can go into that field, by the way. It's a tough program because you got to be good. It's obviously life and death issues.
Challenging.
Yes. And it's challenging, sure. It's hard work, but we need those healthcare professionals. And I do, yes, I include nursing graduates as professionals because, again, the job is so important. Okay. I'm going to shift that from that to some of the stories on the Arab American News. .com, which is their paper, and every Friday they post a lot of stories that will be in their Saturday edition, their print edition, which is available throughout town, which I advise you to pick up. But again, if you're just into the internet thing, they usually have most of their stories on by midday in Friday, because they got to take it to press, and the press has to, you know, kick out the paper, print it literally, and then they have to deliver it around. So there's a little delay there. But especially, and of course, it covers national news from an Arab American angle. Of course, why would they call it Arab American News, right? If it didn't have that special focus. But if you click on community news, you're getting a lot of things that are very specialized. And here's the first one that I wanted to mention is, I'm going to do some name dropping here, except only first names, because I didn't catch their last names. But a number of us went up to, from WHFR, four of us actually, went up to the Great Lakes Broadcasting Conference on this last Tuesday. It's an all-day conference run by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. That's right, corporate media, and some of the public broadcasters were there too. And at the luncheon table, where the four of us sat, there's tables for seven, of the three other people who were broadcasters in the state, and usually this conference is kind of expensive for it's not so bad for students, but it's kind of expensive for the full-time people like myself, or at least I'm paid for part-time, but I'm here a lot. So at the table, this is amazing, at the table was Stephen. Last name I couldn't read from across the table, but he was the general manager, executive director of Michigan Radio.
Wow.
MichiganRadio.org, the website, and of course, all the stations affiliated, including WUOM, and throughout the state, that they control the news, and it's a wonderful service. Rick Pluto and others are in Lansing all the time covering legislature, which is why I always go to MichiganRadio.org to find out what's the latest thing happening right here in the state. Because other than what's happening in your city, and perhaps Wayne County, they're not broke yet. No. In fact, they balanced their budget for the first time this year in a couple of years, so they're okay. But not a lot of news there. There still is the issue, of course, what are they going to do with the jail? And Dan, what's his name, the developer from Detroit, who has bought a lot of properties, he has proposed buying that.
Dan Gilbert.
Thank you. Yep. That's why John's here. He's got a better memory than I do. John knows everybody. Probably you've had lunch with him or gone to dinner with him, John.
Not yet.
Almost everybody John knows. And Dan Gilbert, right, his proposal was, let me buy the jail the way it is. I'll tear it down and build something else. But a part of the deal is that he would provide money enough for another jail to be built somewhere else, maybe nearby, the right way, the cheaper way. You know, I don't know what that is. Tents? I don't know. But and so that's still being debated. I think Warren Evans, who is the head in charge of Wayne County.
Wayne County executive.
There you go. He's the exec. And I think most of the commission is actually in favor of that. So maybe that's going to happen. Of course, I've got a comment later, if we can get it in, about the prison systems in Michigan. Oh, boy. Which, it's unbelievable. It's Jack Lessenberry's article in the Metro Times
really
this week.
Good. Really
yeah,
good.
Really fantastic, succinct statement. Goes on 4 pages. But it's excellent summary of the problems with the Michigan, the prison system in Michigan. I hope our Republican legislators take note of that. But getting back to the story here, what did Stephen from Michigan Radio say? Well, first of all, he knew Dearborn well. He was the general manager of WNIC when they actually had studios here in Dearborn. And he knew Jim Harper and all the famous people from the 70s and 80s. And he said a lot of nice things about Dearborn. And he seemed like really a nice person. I'm so impressed when the head of a media organization is basically a nice person. I mean, why am I surprised? Well, Fox Cable TV News. Did I hear that? I didn't hear that phrase. No, I really say that? Anyway, but speaking of Fox, one of the other three at the table was the general manager of Fox 2 in Detroit. Hmm. The top guy. So two top guys in the media in this area were at our lunch table. And they talked to each other a lot, of course, because they had a lot in common. But the Fox 2 guy, he leaned over and he said, I know a lot about Dearborn. What's going on there with the police department? So I filled him in. Apparently, he doesn't listen to my show regularly here. But that's okay. He's busy. And he said, when I mentioned the survey that was done, supposedly by Action News, Channel 7, the survey of Detroit of Dearborn police officers, that 120 out of 180 actually did send that back. And it was half of them said there's very low morale in the department, in the police department. And those half that thought there was low morale, a lot of them thought that Chief Hadid should resign or should be replaced. And he said, you know, I know Chief Hadid very well. And of course, formerly he was with the Detroit Police Department. And he said, I think he's an extremely intelligent man. And we've had him on this show, talked to him many times, and gives good interviews and seems, you know, very well liked. But when I brought up this this survey, this actually was some sort of multiple pages. It was like a 70-page questionnaire that had to be answered, maybe multiple choices, but had to be answered by the police officers. Pretty scathing. Well, when he heard that, he said, why would they do that? Which means, why would Channel 7 do that? Why would they initiate that? Just to make, because Dearborn would look bad. You know, it's only one side of the story. I mean, the other side is the mayor's point of view. So this did get on TV, and at ArabAmericanNews.com, they have a still frame. Not that I can't click on it. Maybe I could go to Channel 7's website, but I won't take your time. They did get Mayor O'Reilly on camera commenting about the survey and morale, but he didn't respond when the story first aired on Channel 7 on April 28th. And he said was that the Police Officers Association, their union, was the one that were behind that study. But officials of the union, Kenneth Grabowski, the Dearborn business agent at the Police Officers Association of Michigan, that's the Michigan collaboration of all those police officer unions, said he's not even read the survey. He says, we didn't have anything to do with it. because it would look bad if they were the ones starting it. And I think they have a contract up for review next year. The city's not going to be very friendly to them if they... it's sort of like you take your dirty laundry to show the public. You know, that's never a fun idea, never respected by the other parties, even though sometimes you might feel you have to. But they're saying they didn't do it. William, who is the head of Fox 2 in Detroit, said, why would Channel 7 do that? It's not really very balanced. I'm thinking, yeah, Fox should have done it. I mean, no, I'm sorry, William. Not Fox 2 in Detroit. They're not out of control like Fox Cable TV News being slanted. Everything they do has an opinion, whether they say it or not. It's very slanted to the hyper-conservative side. And everybody should know that. A lot of people who watch Fox News, cable TV news, not Channel 2 in Detroit, but the Fox News cable service, should know that. And maybe they love it because it is. And they're conservative too, and that's okay. But
is that survey, Jay? That survey is not connected to the recent story about the Department of Justice and Dearborn combining.
No, let me go to that.
Is that that's not the same thing.
Also, if you go to Community News, that Arab American News website, that's one of the questions there. Dearborn Police Union has slammed Chief Haddad in a memo, and they actually do a bad photograph of it from the Police Officers Association of Michigan. It's Grabowski again. At the end of this memo, as you are aware, the department has placed you under a, oh my gosh, what is that? A microscope. The Department of Justice has placed you under a microscope and is unreasonably investigating good police work in Dearborn now. And, of course, Haddad was the one who asked them to come in.
Right.
Said, the federal government didn't say, there's terrible things going on there in Dearborn, we're going to come and investigate. He asked them to come in and look at all their policies and procedures. Well, of course, that sort of observation, investigation, the Police Officers Association feels is getting in place of in getting in the way of their police work. And it says the chief is attempting to be politically correct, but it is not in the best interest of his officers. Be cautious in your duties and be extra safe. This is a letter that's gone out to the officers from the Grabowski in the union. So he says, if you have any questions, contact Grabowski or the POAD board, Police Officers Association board. That's not nice. If the police officer, Dearborn Police Department, is upset about that, maybe they were upset about a couple months ago to actually start that survey that they sort of said, Channel 7, would you put your name on this instead of us? We don't want to get into too much trouble here. And, of course, Grabowski, again, in his words, he thinks the Dearborn Police Department is under unreasonable scrutiny, quote-unquote, unreasonable scrutiny. Again, that's completely in the Arab American News. It's not on Press and Guide website. It's not at Times News, newsherald.com either. That's the story there in Detroit.
The spin you heard before that was that there was going to be a very positive idea to get the collaboration of the folks from the Justice and Dearborn working together to solve whatever problems might come in the future and what's happened in the past.
Well, I mentioned this last week, John. I know you weren't here, but I know you're listening to the show afterwards. But, I think the major news media, when they first heard this, they didn't go into detail. It sounded almost like Dearborn is in a lot of trouble, and the DOJ from Washington, D.C. is coming in to investigate. They didn't give the proper spin on the report that, and it should have been up front, that the chief here asked them to come in and review policies, because there had been a couple of complaints from local groups that things weren't working well. And I think he was probably felt very safe and secure in his policies and in his procedures, even though, yes, there was two deaths of unarmed people who were shot by Dearborn officers, different situations, though. And they're being fully investigated. Of course, I said last week, how the heck long does it take? The first one was in December.
Yeah.
And I have to say it again, if anybody listens to the show and is concerned, Detroit Police Department had that one. Don't they have any extra people that could work a little quicker? We're now in 6 months almost from that incident.
Yeah.
6 months. They have a part-time person that they brought in. I mean, how long does it take to look at the video? How long does it take to take notes from or give depositions for all the individuals that participated? How long does that take? That can't take 6 months. I mean, I agree with, to this extent, the groups that are complaining about those incidents and saying, please investigate, get a result. It's got to be quicker than that. It can't take that long. There should be a team of full-time people. Internal affairs?
Yeah.
Can't they put Detroit's internal affairs department? Isn't there several people? Couldn't they investigate this too? Who's investigating it for the Detroit Police Department? And then, of course, the incident in January, because it was on, I think, a state highway or something where the shooting actually finally occurred by Dearborn officers, Michigan State Police are investigating that one.
Yep.
How long does it take for the state police to investigate something?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand. In fact, in terms of video, there was no video from the December incident, I don't think, because they had to chase the suspect for like a block and a half on foot. So unless they were wearing chest cams, which I don't think they were. Is that what they call them, chest cams?
Chest cams, yeah. Sounds good.
You know, video camera recording from right. the breastplate on their chest. There wouldn't be any video for that in the final moments, which is when the shooting occurred anyway. So how long does it take to get the interviews? And to look at forensic evidence. Let's not forget forensic. You know, that might take a while.
That could.
You know, it's not like TV. You can get a DNA readout in 20 minutes.
Right.
That doesn't happen. They still don't know how Prince died.
No, I haven't heard that.
Big time movie star. What? And Wisconsin, well, of course, their state budgets have been cut by Governor Walker there so that they hardly have any services at all anymore. But seriously, it takes weeks and weeks and weeks to get some of those tests back. And so if it's forensic evidence, that could be the holdup in some cases, whether it's blood tests or, you know.
Sampling of DNA.
I think they can do alcohol levels quickly, but maybe testing for other drugs to be present. Obviously, they still don't know about Prince. Mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, a high-profile thing. I mean,
at least it hasn't been published yet. I mean, they may have already found out.
Oh, I think they'd publish it pretty quick.
Yeah,
I
hope so.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we have other evidence now, folks, and you've heard about it because it leaks out through all social media and so on, is that there's pretty good evidence that Prince had a serious problem with painkillers, and that could be opiates. But then someone also suggested cocaine, which is an opiate too, I guess. It almost got help. There was a major treatment center that people, I think it's some of his advisors or his fans or people that knew him, they had set up a meeting with the son of the doctor that ran the California clinic. And it was actually the son that arrived at Paisley Park, Prince's home, and knocked on the door and said, I'm here to talk to Prince in regard to maybe medical treatment. And they couldn't find him, and then they searched around, and that's when they found him in the elevator dead. So it was actually that doctor's son who came to it. So he was only about one day away from maybe getting on a plane and going to California and being helped. And of course, you always wonder about the handlers, the people that he was, his management, the people that were there with him on each day. Weren't they concerned about the situation?
Yeah, had to have been seen a long time ago before they acted.
I would think so. Just, you know, like Elvis Presley and all of his hangers-on that encouraged him and his excesses. Of course, you feel that if you say no to the boss, he's going to fire you if he's in that kind of bad mood. Okay, so we're moving on to other stories here. The new WHFR Journal, 25 minutes until Highway 61. Kitty Love comes in with the best in the blues today at 2 o'clock till 4 o'clock. And, of course, Mike Holloway continues with his Go With The Flow show, best in blues, his style, from 4 to 6. So you don't want to miss this afternoon and blues music that no other station plays as much new music and local blues music as we do here at WHFR. I just want to go back over the papers real quick. A few stories we might not have mentioned at all. Let's see. Yes, Jody Rampala didn't mention this. John mentioned it to me. I should have seen it. One of the great writers for a long, long period of time. Her goodbye is in last Sunday, May 1st, paper. And she says, today, it says, fast forward to today, even though she started newspaper beat in Dearborn Heights. And she says, that's right. Once upon a time, there were enough people on staff to divide up into several different beats. That is different responsible things that you would cover.
Yep.
And fast forward to today, she says, and I've been the only staff writer covering all of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights for more than 2 years now. It's been a challenge, she said, and something I could have done without the help. I couldn't have done without the help of my freelance team. So I've been mistaken for, wow, the last 6 months to a year. I thought there was no full-time people at the Dearborn Press and Guide. And she says she was. Of course, what about now? I don't know. She says at the end of the story that her friend and colleague, Andrea Blum,
yep,
is taking over the Press and Guide. Now, I don't know what that taking over means, a local manager or editor, because they haven't had an editor locally. And she says, and I know that she'll do a great job of keeping you informed, but she'll need your help too. Well, is she a reporter?
She's a reporter, yep.
Okay. Is she full-time?
Full-time,
again, yep. They really need somebody full-time, as Jody apparently was, and good for you, Jody, who was managing Katie. That's Katie Hetrick, the freelance education reporter. Karen, I don't know last name there, Elizabeth, Craig, Scott, Micah, Teresa, Julie, Ryan, Debbie, Constance, and the many interns. And, of course, papers always love interns because they don't have to pay them. Right. Or if they do, it's extremely low wages.
Yeah. Well, also, Dave Herndon is on this on the staff, and he's also a sports – he's been involved with sports reporting, but he's covering regular stories as well, you know.
Yeah, she doesn't mention him, so maybe because sports is kind of a separate area or something in her mind.
But, you know, for the example, the story on the emergency versus via text messages story.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He put that together. You know?
Well, let's do that in a second. Let's do that next. Yeah. What Jody doesn't say is that she was fired. She doesn't say that management said she had to go. I can certainly understand that maybe even Andrea Blum is only part-time taking over for her when she was full-time, which would be really, really sad. But okay. So you deserved all of my respect, first of all, for the stories that I read over the last all the years you were there. I've read many of your stories over the air and commented, and very good reporter, Jody. Thank you for all of your work. She currently doesn't know what she's going to do. She's I'll be around spending some well-deserved time with my 13 and 11-year-old daughters while determining where life will take me next. Thanks for the memories, everyone. Certainly, Jody, you can come and take our staff training class and be part of our WHRV News Time if you need that stimulus. Are you overqualified? Not around here.
No.
No. We take everybody. You know. We'll be inspired by somebody like Jody Rampala, obviously. Some previous journalist. I mean, that would be great. Don't worry, John. You stay downriver reporter. Don't worry.
But if you're listening, Jody, we'd be happy to have you
absolutely
on our show.
Right. Even though we're a volunteer-based thing. Just send an email, whfr@hfcc.edu, and I'll get back to you. Yeah. But thank you for all your service. Great journalism, as long as it lasted. And I certainly didn't want to slight you over the last couple of years when I continued to say there was no full-time people at the Press and Guide, because you were there. So good for you at doing reporting. Okay. And you were mentioning the texting 9/11. What a concept. A lot of people love texting. They do texting all the time. Majority, especially younger people, that's what they do most of the time is texting. They don't do the phone call thing.
Oh, that's true.
Or email even.
Yeah. I can attest to that with my son and daughter for sure.
So now in Dearborn, it is possible, as the story has indicated in the papers for the last couple of weeks here, or at least a week ago. There it is. It's from the last Wednesdays.
This Wednesday.
This Wednesday, two days ago. Yeah, right there. Because they're short of news, so Dave Herndon Dave is actually with heritage.com, so I'm not sure he's actually located in Dearborn as part of Press and Guide, although they're all in the same building or something.
They are, and they...
Yeah,
they
so. But they write for a variety of papers.
They feed into each other, yes.
Right, yeah. Okay. So call if you can, text if you can't. They still recommend that in Western Wayne County, that's where it's been, the system of texting 911 has been expanded to, including Dearborn, that they still want you to make a phone call to 911 if there's a need for emergency help of any kind, because you can give more information faster that way. Texting, even if you think you can push those buttons fast, there's always more information that the 911 people want to know. Like, what is your exact address? How fast can you type your exact address? You know, and the exact problem. You say, my mother's not breathing. Well, what was the cause? Was she shot? Did she slip and fall? Was she eating and got something stuck in her throat? Because they can give you, 911 can give you, if they're talking to you, some good advice right then and there. Did you try this or that? Try it now. You know, if she's not breathing, try it now. And, you know, because it'll take a few minutes at least for the 911 team to get there. So, call if you can. Text if you can't, though. Like, if you're the only one alone and you can't even make it you're not strong enough for some reason to actually make a phone call, then text. And where do you text it to? 911. That's the magic number, of course, for text now, too. So it's good to mention that. I'm looking back at Times Herald from Wednesday, and also a story I think we missed in the past. We said the city was thinking about it. And this is a dog park for residents and their dogs. See, in Dearborn, all of our city parks are currently off limits to dogs. And they still haven't decided, it's going to cost them money, but they still haven't decided that they're going to do it, and that'll be decided maybe at the next meeting. It's going to be a separate park. It sounds to me like it's going to be, it says 2 acres of city-owned land behind Henry Ford Centennial Library. That'd be just south of the Centennial, with ample parking and central location for the residents. And if it does happen, you'd have to pay an annual membership fee, I guess, to keep the park clean. although I assume they want you to pick up after your dogs.
You have to bring a pooper scooper. Yep. Yeah,
probably. It doesn't say that here. Yep. And they haven't set hours of operation. But by the way, that membership fee is going to be from $30 to $50 range. And they have to keep their dogs up to code. What is there, shots or something for dogs? Or
yes.
Dogs up to code. I don't know what that means.
They have to register their dogs.
Oh, register, of course. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and when they register them, they ask about what shots they've had and what type of inoculations, et cetera, that they've already done.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay.
They're not allowed in there unless they're healthy. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the special land use was approved during the March 7th Planning Commission meeting. So this is moving ahead. At this point, to make this development happen, they still have to invest about $140,000. So approval by the Finance Committee is the next step. Is there money in the budget for next year, I guess, because they're 2016-17 budget starts July 1st, and that's still being talked about in public sessions. Check their website, cityofdearborn.org, for the next session that you might want to participate in. I highly recommend that you do read it. Last week, I spent a lot of time going over the 11 pages, and because, especially hidden a little bit in all that text, is the fact that Dearborn is by 2017, certainly, is going to have another tax. Either a replacement for the 3.5 mils that expires at the end of this year, or because of low property values and the Headley Amendment holding back money coming into the city, or, as Mayor O'Reilly suggested, either a city income tax instead, because it'll be more stable. So it might be the same amount of money out of your pocket, except people with a higher income would obviously have to pay more money, the income tax.
Or of a sales.
Well,
you talked about a sales
tax. I mean, even if the income tax is a flat tax, I'm just saying If you don't have much money, the number of dollars is less. Okay, but it, yeah. Or a sales tax, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He called it a consumption tax.
Consumption, right?
Yummy. Consume. Because that's a very stable tax, even in times of economic trouble. You might say, well, if it's bad economic times, you're out of a job or whatever, you're not going to buy as much. But amazingly, property values drop much, much more than income from a sales tax drops, because people still have to buy some stuff, and it stays. That's the most level tax in all economic situations, good or bad, of all. So if you want to support your government, which we got to have those basic services, folks, all the time, in the best, most stable way, so they don't have a crisis of funding constantly, then they got to get away from the property tax. And this might be one way to do it, even though a lot of people will say, I don't want that. It's like another tax. Well, it's a different kind of tax. But if the 3.5 mil is going to go away, it'll either have to be replaced. That's quite clear from the budget proposal statement. Or it will have to be replaced by something, either by the same 3.5 or more. Because we also lost the money from business property, that is the internal business property inside the buildings, called personal property taxes by the state of Michigan. And so what are we going to do? So that's going to have to come up, so be concerned about that, certainly. Let's see, we did the dog park, okay. Let's see what else is in the papers here. This is new WHFR Journal from WHFR.fm, the station making waves all the time. And we're turning those pages live on the air. I mean, that's how good the reporting is.
How current we are.
Yes. Oh, right. As soon as we get the pages, we're turning them here. Let's see. Anything from here? Okay, here's something that's a little strange. But the former MSU player has been arrested with a firearm at a Dearborn strip club. Okay, and this was reported on May 1st that Keith Appling, a former Michigan State University basketball player, was arrested May 1st on firearm charges. And get this, he brought a loaded rifle to a strip club. And it wasn't just any kind of rifle. It was a loaded assault rifle, like the AK-47 type.
Right. Yep.
Why would you need an AK-47 at a strip club? All the girls are almost naked, so they're not holding weapons, I don't think, right? You can't be afraid of them. Don't get close to me, honey, or I'll shoot my AK-47. I mean, what in the world was he thinking? But nonetheless, this gets turned into an interesting editorial at the Arab American News, because they write editorial opinions.
Okay.
Not the Press and Guide, not the Times Herald. They don't have an editorial opinion of their own. The Times Herald usually gets an opinion from some other allied paper, but not their own. Well, okay, so let's take a look at that. We've still got the Arab American News website open, and here's the story. It's actually a long story. I'll try to summarize, but basically the idea is that Dearborn strip clubs in general, they say it's an ironic presence in a so-called halal community, where there's so many Arab Americans that do practice a certain sort of, well, may I call it cleanliness of sorts because of the halal state of the food. And I think it's just a blessing. It's sort of like kosher food to Jewish people. It's more the blessing than it is standards of cleanliness, as I understand it. No disrespect to the Jewish people or to Muslims. But, okay, in a community that has many faithful Arab Americans, having a strip club is kind of strange too. And this is just quickly, it says the city is the capital of Arab America, because there's more here than any other place in the United States, Arab Americans, but it's also home to several venues that feature topless dancers. Inside Dearborn strip clubs, among the loud party music, dim lighting, and topless dancers, Arab American customers and entertainers can be seen reveling in the erotic atmosphere even while eating halal food. Oh, they do have halal food there. Well, good for them. While you're watching this, okay. The relationship between these clubs and the Arab American population is complex, they say. While some people consider such establishments sinful and harmful to the city, many appreciate their entertainment value. And I think, again, one of those crazy opinions of mine, to each their own, as long as they're not hurting somebody. Boy, is that libertarian. I don't know. It says, but they actually went, for newspaper reporters, they actually went and interviewed several customers, but they did it anonymously here at one of the strip clubs. Okay. And one of these people commented and said, these clubs offer an avenue for Arab Americans to satisfy their sexual desires. Well, not literally, of course, without the social hassles and complications of building a relationship. And I haven't been in these clubs. Prude that I am. I just don't get out much, I guess. So I don't know if they're doing lap dancing. Is that one step closer to a relationship? I don't know. Again, there's no touching allowed usually. Anyway, so for in the same person that they interviewed for Arab American News, he pointed out that despite a taboo on viewing pornography, the Arab world has one of the highest rates of pornography-related searches in the world, according to Google Trends data. Oh, my gosh. Love that internet, don't we? Likewise, he says, quote here, there is a duality on sexual desire in the community, unquote. Publicly, we denounce strip clubs, but we do make these clubs thrive. And they have a number of comments there, and the story goes on and on. At least they have halal food, which they always order, they say, when they go there. Okay. But a lot of people say it's just not good for individuals. And Imam, a religious Muslim leader in the community, not named here, but said that clubgoers might receive temporary pleasure, but they may become more stressed and depressed in the long run. Okay. And there's the sanctuary issue, and here's where the NBA player, and they're wrong. Is the NBA? I thought it was just MSU.
Yeah, he just played at MSU.
But did he get a contract with the NBA or something? Why? He's not currently with MSU. Okay, no. Well, anyway. They say that an NBA player was allegedly caught with a loaded gun outside a Dearborn strip club this week. I think it's the same thing. As owners of these entertainment venues grapple with the stigma of running a taboo establishment often invites criminal behavior and invites eagle-eyed policing, they constantly strive to uphold their reputations and enhance experiences for customers, staff, and neighboring businesses. I wonder, and this was the Pantheon Club, I can mention them, I think, in Dearborn and Michigan Avenue. Everybody knows it's a strip club, right? But was it Dearborn police on duty outside that did the arrest because they were already on duty? Or was there a call from management at the Pantheon Club that wanted to bring this attention to them? Somebody had to, you know, be acting there. Okay. Of course, the manager at Pantheon Club said that nowadays clubgoers desire a fine dining experience, focusing more on having a good time rather than the topless performers. They're just, I guess, in the corner or something without any lights on them. I doubt that. Usually right in the center, right, with a lot big bright spotlights. I haven't been in there. I don't know. One of the other clubs that we know of that's been a strip club is BT's Executive Club, a few blocks away from the Pantheon, and the owner there said that says that their club plays a crucial role in the community in providing entertainment and jobs. And in fact, the owner says, "You know how many girls are on the streets, and I save them." Oh, boy. Wow. He says after joining his team, the performers find sanctuary here, quote unquote. Well, they got a well-paying job all of a sudden, so they don't have to be on the streets. He's not giving details what that means. We can guess, of course. And the owner, again, I can mention his name. It's in the story. But the owner says, yeah, they're naked, but they're safe. I'm sorry. I think that's cute.
Mother's Day proclamation.
Well, it is a kind of sanctuary then, you know, and a few of the other places like the Toy Chest, which is a Detroit strip club on Dearborn's border, says his establishment strives to uphold good relationships with the community. And I said, Arabs come here all the time, they've stated, and so on. So that's the story. That's their opinion piece. It's a good analysis of both sides. Certainly, they're not just saying strip clubs are bad, but they say there's religious issues, community issues. But they give a few reasons why they're helpful to certain people, and hadn't thought about it being a sanctuary to get girls off the streets, because they don't have men doing stripping there, right?
No,
I don't think so. John doesn't know. Why would he know? Why did I ask him? That's just wrong. I apologize, John. It's just that he knows so much. I just thought
One I'm not touching, Jay.
No, okay. Thank you, John. We have to keep our image, our authority image, clean here over the air, or people will stop listening. Okay. We have only a couple of minutes to go. Oh boy, Kitty Love is in the studio. She's getting that great blues ready for you. It is very exciting. And Kitty Love, the small station news here. I actually found the power button that was lost off our CD player. So you now have a button to push instead of having to stick your finger inside the console and turn it on and off. So isn't that great news?
That's special.
No, it isn't great.
And we have a new monitor.
Yes, we can actually see people who come to our door before we let them in.
Do you have see
them.
Mother's Day?
Yes. Okay, right. Going to Wikipedia, let's sum it up this way. Let's just do it. This is the Mother's Day proclamation, and yes, WHFR Dearborn. Here we go. It's still on the podcast for 2 minutes. And this is from 1872. Julia Ward Howe, well, she wrote this in 1870. It was Howe's appeal to womanhood. She was trying to appeal to women to unite for peace in the world. And, of course, there was the problem with the Civil War, but also the Franco-Prussian War, too. And she felt women had this great responsibility to bring about peace. She says, again, in the sight of the Christian world, have the skill and the power of two great nations exhausted themselves in mutual murder. And to bring it up today, just fill in the blank there about which nations are killing whom. Again, said Julie Ward Howe, have the sacred questions of international justice been committed to the fatal mediation of military weapons? In this day of progress, in this century of light, the ambition of rulers has been allowed to barter the dear interests of domestic life for the bloody exchanges of the battlefield. Thus men have done. Thus men will do. But women no longer need to be made a party to proceedings which fill the globe with grief and horror. Despite the assumptions of physical force, the mother has a sacred and commanding word to say to the sons who owe their life to her suffering. That word should now be heard and answered as never before. Arise then, Christian woman of the day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be that of water or of tears. I say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, patience. She concludes, in the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a General Congress of Women, without limit of nationality, may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and at the earliest period consistent with its objects to promote the allegiance of different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, and the great and general interest of peace. So, do we look for a woman president and other women to elect in November? Will that same desire for peace, which comes from the fact of motherhood, I think, and of caring for their children.